Hello and welcome to a special edition of Jim Brown's Outbreak Capercast. This time we're going to speak with Mr. Roger Hatfield, who together with his partner Rich DeFede have for 35 years been the kingpin at Gold Coast Yachts, St. Croix, Virgin Islands. Gold Coast Yachts is probably the world's leader in the production of custom-built, advanced multi-hull watercraft. Roger and his wife Cynthia are particular friends of mine and my wife Joanna. We've known these folks since we first arrived in Virginia in 1975. And Roger is one of at least four preeminent multi-hull designers who, I'm very pleased to say, started their careers with a Sea Runner trimaran. But I did not know until recently that I ruined Roger's life. Roger will explain. His father was a graduate naval architect from MIT, and indeed Roger was enrolled at the prestigious Webb Institute of Naval Architecture when he saw a drawing of a Sea Runner trimaran in the Whole Earth catalog, promptly dropped out and began to build his boat in his backyard near Washington, D.C. Sadly, his father did not live to see that his son would become a prime mover in this sea change in marine architecture that we are witnessing as we speak. So Roger and Cynthia sailed off to the Caribbean in their 31-foot Sea Runner Mandala, and now, 37 years later, they have returned to retire in North Carolina, and we were able to speak on the phone just the other day. As you've seen before, the audio reception on these telephone conversations is pretty spotty. Actually, Roger's cell phone communication was better than mine, landline, so I've had to cut out much of what I had to say, but we're going to join the conversation in progress right now. Hello, Roger Hatfield.
That would relate to building another four-hulled catamaran.
Four-hulled catamaran.
Four hull.
What do you call it?
I don't think I've usurped the word from you, Jim. The fellow who created this calls it a tandem catamaran, and I think for good reasons. And so I guess, I can start this whole long story. Jim, you know the next part of this story really well with Arthur Piver in the San Francisco Bay, and I credit him with basically building a simple, functional plywood box, which was comfortable, and I'd have to say was certainly fast for its time, but learning from you, I would say it was safe beyond the imagination of the boaters of the time. Boats come to all kinds of demise, and certainly we know catamarans still do capsize, multi-hulls still do capsize, but it's not that often, and any study of single-handed racing shows that the big monohulls are sinking as often as the big multi-hulls are flipping over, and we know the outcome, which one we want to be on when one of those two things happens.
Yeah.
And your stories about, and I've seen some of it myself, boats going, getting stranded up on the reef or the rocks, they're way better off when they're sitting stable and getting their bottoms torn out than if they lose their keel and lose their stability and then just go sideways. So, I think it's fair to say that that they were safe beyond the imagination of the boating community at the time. Every boat we've ever built has been unsinkable. Where I was going to go also was to honor Woody Brown here in the beginning, and his boats were eminently beachable. That's what they did. They took tourists out sailing, and they'd slide them in on the beach and load them up and take them out for sail and bring them back. So, you know, beaching a boat, that became a new possibility. I'd love to give you a credit for all the things that you had done. You took those early designs and you improved them, their shapes, their technical stuff, their construction drawings, the information to go along with how to build a boat, and, hey, if I'm allowed to say so, a little bit of tribal bonding, too.
Tribal bonding, yeah. That's great.
I don't think in all the boating that from prehistory, I don't think there's ever been a bigger change in boats than with the advent of the modern multi-hull. there is nothing that's happened so revolutionary, and we have to credit the Polynesians. But it doesn't matter where you look. If you're looking at ocean cruising, if you're looking at ocean racing, if you're looking at the day charter business, if you're looking at the large ferry routes, if you're looking at the playboat scene on the beaches with your little trimarans and Hobie cats and beach cats, and if you're looking at even on the placid lakes across the U.S., they're loaded with aluminum pontoon caps. And they're just, and now the America's Cup, right? Just spectacular. You know, I mean, the America's Cup cats are just, and the trimaran were just spectacular. And these things that were once considered unsafe and monstrosities are now elegance and wonderful safety attributes. I mean, they're just, you know, the whole world is floating on top with these new crafts. So anyway, the reason I say all that is to say, I'm really sorry to my friends who are the owners and the lovers of something that was, you know, once just simply called a boat. And they have inadvertently, from a requirement for description, they have become a monohull. And they were, you know, and it's only because we had to become multi-haulers. So, and we had to eat so much crap from these guys, so much derision for so many years. And, you know, occasionally out of my mouth, somebody that I smoke or somebody that just, you know, they get called a monomaran. I try not to do it very often, but yeah, they get called a monomaran. And usually they're just monohulls because that's what technically they have to do. So all that was to say that there's a new boat on the scene, and it's the boat of the brunt of many jokes. There are four hulls, and what I want to get straight in this discussion is the one I want to talk about is not a quadmoran, and it was not created by some delusional backyard builder who wanted to be a designer.
Delusional,
It's not a delusional backyard. It's done by a genius. And this guy, he's got the Midas touch. He thinks outside the box. And he has this way of, like, I don't care what other people think. And furthermore, the guy has the wherewithal to pull it all off.
Oh, what's his name, Rod?
This guy is named Warren Mosler. And Warren is just into everything. He is seriously smart and seriously competent, and he just, his mind's constantly at work. He's just he's an American dream story, really. And, you know, he's a world-renowned economist and an investor, and he has just turned every idea he's ever done into a success. I'm going to come back to him because it's about him, really, but some of this is about me, and you had asked that I speak a little bit about me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got the sailing bug too. I was sailing in my mom's womb. And, you know, my dad had gotten a late start in love of boating, but my mother had grown up on boats. And my dad was just highly appreciated on board my grandfather's father's dad's boat. And my father ultimately graduated from MIT with a degree in naval architecture, and you know, he blessed me with being able to sail small boats on lakes and stuff when I was a kid in the summers. And as a teenager, we had those monohulls. We had the, you know, a Bristol, and then we had a Vanguard, and we raced on the Chase Bay and cruised and so forth. And his only damn problem was he transformed into a Captain Bligh when he went sailing. But the good side of that, the good side of his Captain Bligh attitude was that he had really high standards. You know, he was this naval architect, and proper yachting was really important, and doing things right was important, and I learned that from him. But I tell you what, boy, he kind of forced me to go off to engineering school, and when I dropped out of Stevenson to the technology, he was a little bit, you know, it got me a good start, taught me where the books were. And I wanted to build a boat. And what did I see? I'm looking through the Whole Earth catalog, and there's this really cool-looking isometric trimaran. drawn by this guy, Jim Brown. It was a sea runner. And, you know, Cynthia and I dropped any idea we'd ever had of building a ferro cement boat. And
thank God.
That was it, you know. And you know, my dad, he helped out a little bit. He bought me clamps and saws and block planes and things to build this with. And ultimately, he bought me a couple anchors. And I think he even bought me a used outboard motor to go with the boat and stuff. But his distaste for these multi-hulls, and we're talking in 1975 or so, he actually was able to look at some of them and go, well, the reason this one's doing this is because of this, and the reason that one's doing that is because of that, right? I mean, he could be at the same time really clear about what was making them work. And that was through his, you know, his education. And unfortunately, he passed away. He did watch Cynthia and I sail away to paradise in our little Sea Runner, and it might have perhaps been his dream, but... You know, to credit him, he worked on the first atomic sub. He worked on the Nautilus in Groton, Connecticut, with the slide rule on the Larsen team, right? But almost everybody that worked on that boat came down with too much radiation and ultimately cancer, and he passed away pretty young with pancreatic cancer. So he wasn't able to refill off after our dreams and perhaps trying to fulfill some other people's dreams. We were maybe going to go around the world. It didn't quite work out that way, but I'll have to say that the beauty of what happened to me was, you know, I landed down in the Caribbean, and I was desperate for work, and I had built my own boat. I could repair stuff, and it was one of the first boats built with epoxy resin. I was really... strong with the use of epoxy, and my deal was real simple to everybody I met, multi-hull people especially. I fix your boat, you take me for a sail. And so I sailed on all kinds of stuff that was down there in the Caribbean, especially around St. Martin in the early days. And of course, Dick Newark was on St. Croix, and I sailed on some of his boats. And Peter Spronk's boats were up in St. Martin, and I sailed on a bunch of those. I actually became the repairman, I guess you'd say, for the Peter Spronk catamarans, and I got flown around and invited down to different places to do major repairs. And I understood the structures of those boats really well. It was shortly after that we sailed to St. Croix, and I have to tell you, the universe blessed me. I met my partner, Rich DeFreedy, and we started talking about building some charter boats. Nothing really happened right away. But it did turn into Gold Coast Yachts, and it turned into what Gold Coast Yachts is today. And I worked by his side for 35 years. And, I got to tell you, I really love the guy. I can't tell you how. Did that all along in the early days. I mean, we are as different as we can be at times, and when we could work together, that was just an incredibly beautiful trait. And he did all the managerial and financial jobs, and he allowed me to be responsible for the designs and ultimately, you know, to create all the stuff we did, the trimarans and the catamarans. So I retired after at boat 119. 120, and they're building 120. They're booked for the next year and a half. So they're finishing 125 or 126 right now. They build about four boats a year now. There was years where we built only one or two, and then in our peak period with 60, 70 workers, we built seven boats one year. Oh. And we've dropped back. It's stressful. I have to say that it's a fantastic business. It's left me feeling wonderful. It's not just the boat designs. It's the guys. It's how the island, how we fit into the island. It's hiring these local guys that can't really get work elsewhere easily. Their high school education was bad on the island's, the government's part, and they weren't the best students. Some of them suffer from just, well, I get white privilege, and so they suffer from the reverse of that, right? And some of these guys are just so lovely. I mean, how many guys have we had? Five, six guys who worked with us for 20 years, and there's a you know, maybe 15 or more have worked for us for over 10. And once they learn their skill, and they learn it slowly, they work slowly, they are competent and they stay on task and they get it done. I mean, we, you know, what do we have but guys who come down and visit us and they sail through or something, they've built their own boat, they're really talented, but they don't integrate well with the team. They always demand way more money. They work really fast, and then they have to sit down and sweat for a while. These guys work steadier. They're built for the climate, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is, it is the only way to really work steady, and the boats demand physical work. And so I'm gonna bless my experience on that island with these guys after coming from my lily white background. And they're the backbone. Now, you know, Rich has got to manage all this, and each one of these guys needs, most of them have a special circumstances, you know, and anyway, enough of that. So we started building with a little bit of cores, and we were building, you know, pretty good quality. We were both real familiar with West System glue. Rich was. We both read the book, and I'd been fixing all these plywood, a lot of these multi-hulls. Some of them were early foam sandwich boats. And we settled down on building real simple stringer frame structure, and the bottoms were always strip planked, and that way we could control the exact bottom shape we wanted, the underwater shape. And then the top sides were always, call them gently compounded plywood top sides onto the stringer frame. And we would glass this stuff with more marine protection than was typical for the time. I mean, we recognized we were building a boat that was in the genre of a cruising boat in terms of its requirement to carry a load, but it was a bumpin' car. It was a dock-busting boat, and so it needed to be shaped and designed for slow-speed maneuvering and bumping stuff and carrying passengers. It had to be passenger-friendly. The lines and the arrangements of blocks and tackle and stuff had to be absolutely safe. And I think that's played out for us really, really well. We played with core materials and stuff, but somewhere in about the year 2000, 2001, we were maybe at about boat 60, and Rich came to me and said, you know, he says, I just keep getting inquiries to build more plastic and less wood. He goes, we're going to have to change. And so we did our best over, say, the next dozen boats, which took us into maybe 204, 205. And we did wet bagging and core materials and things. But finally, you know, we had we'd known Andre Kokrit, the GRP guru, the glass reinforced plastic guru, from Professional Boat Builder. And he was doing infusing, and so we hired him to come on down, and we built a couple molds first for what we wanted, and he worked with us to test our molds and then infuse our parts, figure out the layouts, and so forth.
Infusion molding.
So we started our infusion molding back on boat 72, I believe, was the first one that was truly infused in a 65-foot hull form. We're still building boats out of that mold, and half of them are out in Hawaii. But so all this is going on, and this guy, Warren Mosler, comes back on the scene in 2008. And he requested that we build him one of our 45-foot wave piercers, but they had all been little ferry boats, and they were pretty popular. I mean, some people, you know, thought they'd met God when they went out sailing, they went out powering on one of these boats. I have to confess here to the audience that, for those that don't know me, that unfortunately or fortunately, however life works out, I'm in the first group to get motion sick. And so, you know, I know it's not fear, because I don't have enough fear to protect me. My wife will confirm that. I do idiotic things all the time. I will tear down the steepest hill on my bike, or I am doing stuff. I could swim back from most places if the boat came to demise. You're just not going to – I don't get fearful of stuff. I love rock climbing with my son. Well, my diet I really researched that, and I've got that down to a science, how to keep acid out of my stomach. Don't eat food that makes acid, and don't eat acid food. It's pretty straightforward. Soda crackers, you know, and Tums, and eat a little bit beforehand. Well, if it's your inner ear, and I'm very confident it's my inner ear, then, you know, drugs, they don't even know how they work, but they have a bunch of drugs. We all know the different names of them, and they all have varying degrees of success. I have tried most all of them, and I take them a small dosage, not a big one. I take it an hour or two before I go out, so it's well past my belly. And they work for me. They get me a long way, actually, if it's not atrociously rough. Don't ask me to go into the engine room. But anyway, I was off sailing, beating the windward in my little trimaran to go racing. And, you know, it doesn't take me going, beating up wind in a high-speed little multi-heel doesn't take me more than about 5 or 6 hours before I am into bile, you know. And so I'm down in my stern castle. This is not even a stern castle. This is a sail bin. And my buddy's up there. He's drunk all the cold Heinekens. Now he's drinking the warm ones. He's singing the sailor songs, and I'm begging him to slow my boat down. Well, he wants to set the new record to St. Martin, and he's well on its way. And there's nothing I can do about it because I am immobile. But my brain was still working, and I'm going, that damn trimaran, those llamas are too powerful. They're banging into the ocean. The manhole's banging into the ocean, you know. And so the Wave Piercer is the result of that. And we've, you know, the Gold Coast is sort of famous for having built Wave Piercers. So back to Warren.
Hey, Roger, can I stop you there and say that you designed the Wave Piercing catamaran? I think our listeners need a picture of that. I'm hoping Joe can post a picture if you can fix him up with one.
Sure.
The Wave Piercer is the most unusual boat you'll ever see coming across the water, and I've been out only once in one of your Wave Piercers, and I was agog at how steady she ran.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
you
designed that thing, and you designed most of the other boats that were built. Over 100 boats from Gold Coast Yachts. You were the designer, and as I understand it, having the designer available to the shop floor every day for how many years is really, I think, the central explanation for Gold Coast's success. I don't know of any other builder that has had the designer on the floor for over 100 boats. I mean, who else, you know, who else has done that, Roger? I guess it was Phil Weld who once said, well, anybody can be a boat builder, just put together a shed and a table saw. That doesn't say a thing about design.
That's right. And it's all in the details. And thank you very much. I think everything you said is absolutely true. And that's one reason Peter Spronk was turning out boats, because he was in his shop, and other people weren't. And I really do think it's instrumental. And it was hard to do. And as I was getting ready to leave, one of my guys is watching me pack up and load this trailer, and what are you going to do? And I'm going, well, I'm going to cruise the country in a camper in my truck. Oh, man, he goes, I'd love to do that. And I look at this guy. They all have wonderful nicknames. This guy is Slim. I don't know when he got the name Slim, but Slim. The other ones are Goofy and Bad, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. So Slim goes, yeah, I'd love to do that someday. And they go, well, Slim, how old are you? And he goes, well, he says, I'm 31. And I go, you probably only need to work another 35 years. You know?
So,
it is true. And I think that is one reason that it worked out so well. So anyway, and I will explain the Wave Piercer. My explanation for the Wave Piercer is everybody's been at the beach. Everybody's loved to see the big waves come in. Everybody's been banged back by waves. Everybody's watched surfers duck dive their board. They turn it sideways and shove it into the wave. You want to get underneath the thing. You don't want it to hit you and push you back. Every boat pretty much has to go over the top. They're all shaped to go over the top. Why are they shaped to go over the top? In the Caribbean, you don't get North Atlantic conditions. You don't have to be fearful about how horrible it's going to be. It can be nasty and rough, but in general, it's trade winds, and the waves are basically a certain size. And so you can design a boat for that. Now, it's going to have compromises. The first line you draw on a boat is a compromise, and every line you draw after that's another one. So the compromise here is that Ultimately, when the waves get really big, you can't be going fast through the stuff or you're going to hit your belly. There's every catamaran, every trimaran in the world has a limit where they start hitting their structure from underneath. You don't build a multi-load, don't design one that has a structure way up in the air because you're rarely going to use it. And so it's like driving around a Jeep on the highway. You're not using the structure. You're saving it for, you know, that 3 days a year when you could go off and play with the thing, and it's maybe a bad choice. I don't know. Anyway, the Wave Piercer is designed to go through the wave and yet have plenty of buoyancy to come out on the other side safely. And if you were diving and playing in these waves and you had either your picnic lunch basket with you or you had your little child with you, you would do your best to elevate your child up over your head with your hands and try to still stick your body down through the wave. And I don't think there's a better analogy for the Wave Piercer than just that. The idea was to have the hull go through the wave and have the box of the people, the little baby carriage, go over the top. And it doesn't always work out perfectly, but it's worked out well enough that there's, I don't know, 16 of them now, and one client owns four, has three, and is buying the fourth one. And anyway, so Warren had seen this thing, and he had ridden, he'd wanted to ride on some of them, and the next thing I know, he's requesting that we build one for him, and this would be boat 82. And he insisted that his 3D draftsperson that I had never met do the drawing for the cabin. And I'm going, why? And he goes, because why don't you work with me? No, I want him to do it. Okay, so I reluctantly handed him the 3D drawings for the hull and said, clearly, the center of the weight's got to be here, Warren. Warren would, where's the spreadsheet? And I go, well, yeah, I want to see the spreadsheet. So, okay, I emailed Warren. Warren comes back. This weighs too much. This can weigh less than that. I figured it's that per square foot. You have too many square feet. I'm like, well, I got to be careful because there's tape. And you need to come back and correct. Warren was a trip. And so, yes, Warren has this factory in Florida. I think it's sold now. But back then it was Mosler Auto, and you can go check them out. The cars are barely street legal, but they have incredible performance. So I'm not sure which ones are which. The MT900 can go to 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, God. And it's got enough horsepower, take a deep breath, listen carefully, to go 500 miles an hour. Okay? And these things are now collector's items. There's 40 or 50 of them built. He's got one or two on St. Croix. He bought about a dozen volts for his friends because they really work beautifully on a small island where everybody's got solar panels, and you plug in your volt, the Chevy volt, to the solar panel and drive the thing around and return it. But he has his collection of cars in his garage. Wow. And he can't take his Mosler MT900 very far. But anyway, he clearly was involved with carbon fiber and design, and I have to tell you, when he came back and said, that cabin's way too big, he goes, oh, it's no bigger than yours. So I go, and Warren, this cabin's got 2.5 times the volume of the cabin I was putting. It weighs less. It did weigh less, and it was an ingenious use of space. And everything was going to be carbon fiber. And he's always like, you can put a stiffener here. You can cut that out. And I'm going, Warren, no, you can't. So one day I was arguing there with Warren. It's like, I look at him and I go, Warren, I've already agreed I'm going to do this for you, but I sense that what you want me to do is agree with you, and I really just don't agree with you. I'm not going to agree with you, but I'm going to do it. I don't think it's a bad idea. he's pretty incredible. He's used this boat more than any private boat we've ever built for any owner. It's got an unusual European look, and on top of the Wave Piercer hulls, it doesn't look homogenous. And I get derided for it all the time. But you know what? I'm really happy with the boat. It just performs marvelously. He brags about it all the time. You know, the famous words in the islands are, no problem, man.
Yeah.
So the name of his boat is Not My Problem, spelled with a K, K-N-O-T. It's not my problem. I travel efficiently at a high knot rate at very little fuel. He named
but this is, Roger, this is a two-hulled cat, right? One of your standard race pieces.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yes, indeed, we will get there, but not this week. At my request, Roger has given us all this preamble in order to make sure when we do get to the four-hulled catamaran that no one will think he's just messing around. Indeed, the tandem cat is not delusional. I really don't know enough about it yet myself to say whether or not it has historic significance. But this configuration and this logic, that is to take the displacement out of the middle of the watercraft, may well be a concept that is with us for a long time. If nothing else, it's just one more example of what future watercraft may well look like. So I'm hoping you'll absorb the preamble and come back next week and find out more about this four-hulled catamaran. And before we go, I have a little news. Scott Brown and I, with our Outrig project, finally have a clear directive from the Mariner's Museum. We are going to be producing, for you and for the museum, a half-hour video that is to be, quote, a rich overview of multiple-hulled watercraft, past, present, and future, end quote. Now, this video is to become part of the current exhibit at the museum. I've told you about the one they call Speed and Innovation, with the centerpiece that America's Cup 72-foot catamaran in the Great Hall of the museum. So for this overview, Scott and I will be separating the various categories of multi-hulls and presenting them briefly. But then, in time, each of the categories will receive its own production in much more depth. And because of our 20-year collection of multi-hull history, we are in a position to make this video. But wow, Scott and I have a lot of work to do, and of course the results are deeded to the Mariner's Museum. But if you folks will continue to support the Outrig project, we will undertake to bring it all to you online. So Scott and I are really stoked. We think we could not be having better luck with our 2 years of endeavor to bring you a good video about the modern, the ancient, and the future multi-hull. And at this point, it appears quite possible that that future will include the tandem four-hulled catamaran. And if you return for part two next week, you can hear all about it from none other than the co-designer and builder himself, Mr. Roger Hatfield. Hey, it's happening here at Jim Brown's Outrig Capercast. Bye-bye.